welcome to HR Unpacked, a podcast about HR workplace issues, where we analyse and then discuss the latest developments in HR and employment law that impact both employers and employees.
Brill, so welcome to our podcast. It's an absolute pleasure to have you with us today. And today we're going to be talking about everything AI and how AI can help HR professionals in the workplace in particular, because we're both from an HR background. And we're very pleased and privileged to have a special guest today, Dr. Maria Coutar, from right here at Salford Business School or Salford University itself. So Maria, if you'd like to introduce yourself and give us a bit of insight into what you do here, that'd be great.
Thank you. I'm a reader. My specialism is information systems. I'm particularly interested in the intersection between humans and technology, and especially what that means in terms of the use of technology in business. So it's that kind of human element that is my particular research interest.
Right.
We do a lot of work. I'm co-lead for the Disruptive Technologies Research Centre, and we focus on the impact of changing technology both for individuals and for business. So we've got projects that work across the university through different schools.
Right.
And of course, AI is absolutely at the forefront yep. of emerging technologies at the moment.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. It's great to have you with us.
Information systems, then. When we look at that topic area now, it's so prevalent in all kind of walks of life. How did you get into researching it and being an academic?
So my background has meandered its way into information systems. I started out in law and then over to the dark side of computer science. But I feel like information systems is kind of the bit that sits almost in the sweet spot in the middle, because information systems is very much about the application of digital technology and computing systems. It's about that understanding that actually in kind of the real world, they're socio-technical systems.
Yeah.
We can't look at them just from the point of view of that kind of the technical side. And having that legal background, bit more understanding of some of the issues that organisations face brought me quite naturally to the bit of information systems in the middle.
Yeah, I don't think people realise or understand how much the law is involved with information systems. I certainly wasn't aware of it until I came to Peninsula's HR business forum and they talked about how the law now is trying to govern AI, which I think we'll come on to later. But you're in quite a unique position, I think, there. We've got that legal background, but also researching contemporary information systems as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So initially, my interest was around individual privacy and how people's data is used in different sorts of systems, whether that's in HR, in organisations, or the way in which other organisations that you might interact with, like your bank or something like that, is using and managing your data. That's obviously changed a lot over the years, but a lot of the regulation sits around that kind of spot of data protection and GDPR type legislation. And it's interesting that that is what's underpinning and driving the focus around AI regulation, although obviously that is quite different.
Do you see a lot of synergy from when the personal data issues came out, when that first started, and AI now, which has become more prevalent? Do you see the kind of correlation between that?
I think if you look back at the long history of data protection, absolutely.
Yeah.
So we first had data protection acts brought in 1990, I think was the first one. And over time, they started to become much more embedded in practice. Now we've got to the point where kind of once GDPR was introduced and kind of the follow-on UK law, they're now kind of part of widespread accepted practice rather than being seen as something that's other and not really well understood. I think the real difference though with AI is the speed at which things are moving. Digital technologies change really quickly anyway, but AI is just absolutely feeling like it's got rocket fuel under it at the moment.
So that brings us on nicely to, we did a global survey at Peninsula of all our clients across the globe, and the UK stood out in that it was massively higher than any other area of the globe, in that 74% of businesses hadn't embraced AI. Now, we're primarily SMEs, so it's important to note that. But in your experience, what are you seeing what types of businesses are you seeing embrace AI and what for?
So there is definitely a distinction between the take-up of AI between large businesses and SMEs. That's been reflected in the government survey, the QES briefing, actually, that the Chamber of Commerce run. They ask questions specifically about AI each time. And we definitely have seen up to this point very much those kind of two speeds with the large and small businesses. I think that's rooted in the fact that for the larger businesses who have much better understanding of their data and they have much larger data sets, they're much more likely to be involved in using AI to train, to understand the data that they have.
Yeah.
For SMEs, that's much more challenging. They don't have the same access to data sets. They also don't have the same expertise in terms of how to manage that data, and they're less likely to be what we'd call data-driven organisations.
Yeah.
I think that is probably what accounts for the, the two-speed element.
Yeah.
I think the other important thing to dissociate, though, kind of in that part of the question, is what we've seen over the last 12 months is a huge focus on generative AI.
Okay.
And the larger businesses that have been using AI have been using probably less the generative, but more machine learning, actually training and learning about the data sets that they've got. That's changing all the time now as more organisations move into the generative space.
So, you know, just interrupting there, and apologies for such, but, you know, there is a real lack of understanding of AI, what it is, and some of the terms that you even use there, to be honest, Maria. So for the benefit of the viewer, just explain to us what generative, can't even say it, AI is, if you would, please.
Absolutely. So AI is artificial intelligence, at a very kind of broad or general level.
Yeah.
Machines that are able to behave or think like humans. The famous Turing test refers to whether or not somebody would be unable to distinguish whether they're talking to a human or a machine.
Yeah.
Generative AI is systems or tools that use large language models that have been trained to be able to either predict the next piece of text or to generate something like an image or video.
ChatGPT.
ChatGPT is probably the most widespread example.
Yeah.
There are very similar ones from other providers. So Google have Bard, Microsoft have Bing Chat. But the difference with generative AI is that they're doing something in that creative space.
Okay.
So they can produce text, they can produce speech, they can produce very human-sounding speech that copies somebody's voice. Mm. And there's lots of work around image generation, video generation, and then how you can bring those things together.
Okay.
And that's what's really drawn a lot of the attention over the last 12 months or so.
It certainly has in the media, hasn't
it? Yeah, it has, So is AI more from finding out things to eventually telling us what we should be thinking? Is that where we are at the moment, or are we not quite there yet?
So there's a little bit of a difference in terms of using AI to understand versus the prediction model.
Yeah.
I think that comes back to the balance about how we think about artificial intelligence as mimicking the kind of things that humans do.
Yeah.
AI is very good at helping us to understand huge amounts of information. It's now getting better at moving into that predictive space as well. As we learn more about it and the models become more powerful, we're now able to apply it better in that area.
Is that quite a scary concept for you, where it is getting to that humanistic space where it can think and be creative?
There is a lot of hype around where we are moving in terms of AI, where we're getting very good in terms of elements like the predictive parts of it are on very focused focused problem sets, problem spaces that we're getting to. So lots of examples in medicine, for example, where the AI are doing very powerful things, some real benefits from it, that's still quite a step away from something that really mimics a full human. Mm. And I think that's the bit that really is the scary bit for most people.
Yeah.
I know when you look at the media headlines, the scare stories tend to fall into two big areas. One is AI is going to take all our jobs. The other is that killer robots are out to get us.
Yeah, that is so true, isn't it? That is what is getting the profile, isn't it? But you touched on there the great things it can do as well. So in business, what kind of things are you seeing it being used for that add value?
So two key areas where businesses are starting to bring it in are robotic process automation. So effectively starting to carry out processes using technology with AI being trained to understand how to refine those processes and then perhaps to suggest different ways in which they might be carried out. The other area, which I think is the one that people might be familiar with that they see, is that then is underpinning chatbots. So some of that process automation about responding to customer queries, chatbots are now much more sophisticated in being able to learn from the data sets that they're provided with and then from the responses that they're given and the work that they're doing with customers.
Yeah, training the brain.
Absolutely.
Yeah, good stuff.
You've done some really good research around HR policies, haven't you?
So we have done a trial of using generative AI technologies like ChatGPT to see whether or not they would be helpful in generating policies. That was a really interesting exercise. We tried it two different ways. One, we just asked the AI tool to produce a policy for us, to produce an EDI policy.
Yeah.
The second way we tried to do it was by seeding it, by giving it some examples of policies and organisational styles. In actual fact, we didn't find as much difference between the two as you might have expected that there would be. And it seemed that the policies that were generated, almost kind of, you know, just with that initial prompt, were equally useful compared to the ones where we had tried to shape it a little bit. Yeah. This is all helping to improve our understanding of what's the best way to use that those tools, which is the field of what's been now known as prompt engineering, of learning how to talk to AI tools to get out the best answers from them.
We did a survey together, didn't we? Or your students did a bit of a project.
We did, yeah. So Peninsula, your company, have got a system called BrainBox.
Yeah.
And basically you can go into it and ask it a question, and it's kind of a HR response, isn't it? So we got the Salford students to compare BrainBox and ChatGPT and to ask them questions about HR or employment law.
Yeah.
And the outcome was ChatGPT was a lot longer in terms of its analysis, but not very accurate.
Mm.
Whereas BrainBox was shorter in its answers, but more accurate.
Yeah.
And that's where you can take that feedback, obviously, from the students and the research on it. But I think that's where some of the issues are, where the AI technology provides lots of information, but it's not necessarily accurate, and you have to go in and maybe refine it.
Absolutely. And I think this is really important where organisations are using generative AI technologies, is to understand that you have to cross-check to fact-check.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They are very good at generating text that sounds very plausible, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're giving you accurate facts back. It's very common, actually, that they provide information that's not factually correct.
Yeah.
That's being termed hallucinating. Mm. And that, I think, could be a real pitfall for organisations if they just take everything out of those as a given.
Do you think there'll almost be a fight back, for want of a better phrase? I can't think of a better one, Maria. But like we've seen, this is slightly tenuous, but like we've seen in one of the recent supermarkets, they've gone back from self-serve to people.
Yeah.
Do you think there's almost a fight back? Like, we don't trust AI, we don't trust this way forward, and we want people back? Or
I totally see kind of where you're coming from. I think a nice way to look at that is perhaps around what kind of we term the hype cycle.
Yeah.
Gartner's hype cycles, and they look at kind of new technologies, and you kind of reach this explosion of everybody's talking about them, and they're huge expectations.
Yeah.
And then actually you drop down into this kind of trough where everyone gets a little bit disillusioned with what's happening. And especially with the amount of media hype that AI has been getting, it's getting so much traction. Particularly the consumer-facing tools are absolutely not infallible. And I think definitely that's going to see people feel inevitably that actually this isn't living up to expectations.
Yeah.
And it's going to take quite a long time to work through to how they can be used most efficiently. They're a starting point for being able to do other things.
Yeah.
I'm sure as you've kind of understood in the development of BrainBox, that generative tools to provide information is actually a very complex space, and getting in to a position where you're confident about the accuracy and the usefulness of the advice that's being given back is a really complex challenge. That is not just going to fall out of asking ChatGPT some questions yet.
Yeah,
in the longer term, maybe.
The way I see it with BrainBox is it gives efficiencies. It enables the user to ask very simple questions quick, efficiently, and in their own space. And it doesn't take away the people. It just shifts them to deal with more complex things.
Yeah.
So maybe it's the people aren't removed. The focus is just on a different thing.
Absolutely. There's a lovely quote around that area of whether AI is going to take the job.
Yeah.
And it's not AI that's going to take your job, it's somebody using it will.
Yeah.
And that links into, I think, kind of the importance of skills around using AI for the next, first of all, for the next generation of business students coming through. That's our area of interest, but also for organisations to understand about how to upskill their workforces.
Okay.
Boston Consultancy Group did some research 10 years ago, and they predicted the top 500 jobs that would be automated, and virtually every job was on it. And it was jobs which you didn't think necessarily would be automated, like lawyers, academics, lecturers, teachers. You know, we're all going to be avatars in the future, aren't we? That's the prediction of it. But the research also predicted that other jobs would come along with it.
Yeah.
So people using the technology and also creative skills were going to be the big skills demanded or wanted by employees in the future as well.
Because that's been a big shift with the introduction of computing technology generally, hasn't it? You know, I think there's always this fear about as new technology comes in, what's changing. And in the same way that we've now all got used to having desktop and, you know, different technologies that support all of our operations, they've changed our skills, but they've also brought in new jobs in terms of the things that fit around it.
Yeah. So the businesses, you know, we touched on earlier, 74% of UK businesses are not using AI. What would be the things that you'd recommend them to use it for? What is it really good for right now for businesses?
So I would always propose a cautious approach for organisations rather than thinking, where can I apply AI? It's better to think about this as a problem-focused approach.
Okay.
What are the things in my business that I think could be improved?
Yeah.
And then is there an AI tool that might help me with that? So if there's an area where you're looking for particular efficiencies, an obvious one for most organisations is to start to use it to understand your data better.
Yeah.
And the starting point for that has to be what data you have, thinking about what systems, how that fits together.
Yeah, I've seen it used a lot for recruitment with a lot of the bigger businesses that we work with. I don't know about you, Jonathan, if you're seeing it for any particular areas.
We've seen it for a while, especially in the shortlisting process. And I think it's good because it doesn't have that human bias attached to it.
Yeah.
Where people don't know your name, potentially you don't know your age, all those discriminatory areas, it doesn't know. And it looks at the job description and what the person needs to do that job as well. So it's been used for a while. But I think, like you mentioned, the generative side of it is the next stage of it, where it'll be able to maybe tell us what type of person could do the job or should do the job as well.
Profiling.
Yeah.
It's interesting because we did a podcast not long back on accent discrimination and unconscious bias. And you are so right how that plays so significantly into the recruitment process. So massive pro there, isn't it, for AI?
It is. That's a really interesting example in that you can strip out some of the things that cause human bias when they're doing that reviewing. One thing to be careful with AI is that it is only as good as the data sets that it's been trained on. And we do know that there are some quite significant challenges with, for example, image recognition, where the training data sets have fewer non-white faces, for example. And as a result of that, they are not as good or not as accurate when they're trying to detect and to recognise or match non-white faces.
Yeah.
And that's something that's organisations really need to watch out for, especially when you're bringing in technologies that are, you've got systems that are being provided to be able to do that sifting. Trying to make sure that you've got an understanding of what's underpinned them is really important.
Yeah, yeah. So what do you see as the next phase for AI?
That's a really interesting question. generative AI has really changed the landscape and started to shake things up a lot. I think we're probably going to be entering a period over the next few years where we start to see the fallout of that. There are a lot of new tools coming on board that use those generative AI technologies. So it's less about an organization necessarily going themselves and saying, actually, I'll use ChatGPT to develop the things or to get the information that I want. There'll be other people who use that language model to then go away and sell things back.
Yeah.
So some of the examples that came out very quickly in the creative space are things that will, for example, help with logo, marketing campaigns, even helping you to generate your business model, all of those kind of things, and working on business ideas. So it's interesting to see all of the things that are falling into the market.
Yeah.
Interesting to find out what jobs will be left then, because that really is creative technology, that.
It is. It still needs somebody to drive it. There still needs to be, I think, for any organisation, a focus on where are you going to actually apply those things? Where do you need, why do you need those images? What things are they going to do for you? So although you can get a lot of support from the technologies that will help, I think you'll find that the human element is becoming more specialised around how you use those technologies to help you with what you're doing.
Yeah, I just feel that when the SMEs we deal with, they're just so far behind the curve in that they don't even know what their view is on AI, and we're helping them draft an AI policy to say how they think their staff should interact with it. I think they're quite behind.
It's like telephone and internet policies years ago. They were quite behind it then, weren't they?
Yeah.
They're always behind one step all the time.
Yeah, yeah. So I think there's a real lack of education for businesses in what they think about it and how they're going to use it. And that's something we're helping them navigate, what even their view is, their company stances on it, and reflecting that in a policy. Does it feel like businesses have got a lot to learn about it?
I think there's a real spread. And SMEs are an interesting space because some SMEs are absolutely at the forefront of using really novel technologies, whereas, also in that space, and, much more so than you see with bigger organisations, you also have quite a lot of organisations who are still very non-digital. We talk about the concept of digital maturity. There are many SMEs which have very little use of digital technologies. For them to suddenly say, I need to be using AI, how am I going to step up? A better starting point would be to think about how you can start to digitise some of your processes, how you can start to understand how you can use data better to inform the decision making. And I think from that, you will naturally get to points where you might see some opportunities then to apply AI.
Yeah, when you say that, even embracing digitalisation, I go into companies that they've not even got computers. they've still got filing cabinets and, nothing saved on a P file. And, so you are right. They've got a lot of steps to go.
but as AI becomes more accessible, it will be easier for them to bring things in piece by piece.
Right.
Going back to the legal side of it, which you mentioned at the start, there's been a lot of talk, like you said, Elon Musk has come out and said we need to kind of slow down a bit and maybe have frameworks. Do you think that's what will have to happen, where maybe countries or member states of a bigger organisation will introduce legislation or frameworks to work in? Or do you think it'll be a free-for-all like it is at the moment?
I think certainly we will see regulation coming in, and I think certainly we do need to see regulation.
Could AI being... draft that regulation?
Yeah.
Dear ChatGPT, please draft me an AI regulation.
Try that when you get out of here.
There is already quite a lot of work going on in that space. So the EU have a framework coming in. And this is where I guess kind of AI is an application of some of the, or is an interesting case study of the challenges of global regulation or regulating things that have impacts globally. And we, just in the same way that we've seen actually with GDPR, what technology has done has meant that we are businesses and individuals are interacting much more across what were previously national boundaries or across different regional boundaries, so inside and outside the EU, for example. And that throws up lots of challenges around regulation. In particular, different parts of the world have different approaches to regulation. In Western Europe, we tend to be more cautious and more likely to take a regulatory approach to managing things, whereas in the US, regulation is seen as a brake on innovation, and it should be much more, you know, there is a belief that it should be much more of a free-for-all, which makes it interesting that even in the US, some of the tech firm leaders are saying, actually, that's not necessarily the best approach. So there are an awful lot of factors that feed into that. I think one of the other important things is that the AI large models are being driven by quite a small number of companies, and actually it's very, again, very difficult to regulate those specifically. I think there's a lot being currently placed on them taking a responsible approach, which is perhaps a dangerous assumption to make.
Are there some countries that have adopted AI more prevalently than others? You mentioned the US. Are they kind of ahead in terms of not just usage of it, but how advanced it is for them? Or is it fairly consistent across the world?
It's not consistent across the world. And actually what we're starting to see, we've got a researcher in the business school looking at the AI divide. In the same way that we've seen with other digital technologies, there are gaps and different speeds at which different countries and regions of the world have the opportunity to take those on board. And there is some concern with that, that actually as some countries increasingly adopt AI, that those countries that are still at a slower pace in adopting digital technologies will then also be at a disadvantage in adopting AI technologies and may potentially be left behind. So it's an interesting area to look at to try to understand what you can do to close that gap or lessen the impact.
Yeah, interestingly, in our survey, Australia was the one that came out top,
right,
with 41% of businesses embracing AI in some way. I don't know why, but Australia was the country out of them all. So a different approach, depending on where you are, Jonathan.
Yeah, it must be lack of regulation maybe, or...
Possibly. Okay, so in terms of, I suppose, to kind of bring it to a close, bring the podcast towards its end, give us the top three benefits and the top three negatives. If there are negatives.
I think
for businesses,
start on the kind of the downside.
Yeah, do the downside first. That's the best way.
I think there's the potential for introducing risk into an organisation. I think organisations need to be really clear that they understand what they're introducing when they're introducing AI technologies, that they understand the potential implications, a bit like they do DPIA, so data protection impact assessment. An obvious approach would be to try to do something similar around AI. So that's a very practical thing that can be done. And I think the other kind of risk area for organisations, this links back to that kind of understanding the impact, is making sure that they're actually really clear on how AI is being used in those applications.
Yeah.
And that's not always obvious. I think there's often a kind of, you know, great, we're using shiny AI to do these things, but you should take the responsibility to understand what's happening in there.
Yeah.
In terms of the benefits and the kind of the possibilities, I think AI gives us the possibility to do things that goes beyond what an individual human would be able to do in terms of that depth of understanding across huge amounts of data. I mean, that's a real opportunity for most organisations. Really interesting to see that, you know, because AI tools can look across such huge data sets and they can get really detailed understanding from that, the ability to do things that we simply can't do as individuals, and that's really exciting.
Yeah, a little bit scary.
When you punched in about the to create a policy and you gave it some ideas, does it store it on the system so that when somebody else punched in, develop an EDI policy for me, does it then look back on what other people have looked for and what it's produced as well?
So there is some learning from the system. What you see when you're using an open tool like ChatGPT won't necessarily instantly be giving you what's been learned. So their training data sets, cutoff point, for example, but there are lots of plugins and things that you can use for that. And of course, one of the reasons those models and those tools are being made available is so that people can feed more information in. There is a danger with that as well, though, that you know, increasingly that information that they are learning from is AI generated itself. There has been some concern raised about whether that in itself might cause issues in terms of particularly if there's inaccuracies in that data over the longer term.
Yeah, I know when I've used one of the aforementioned tools, it threw back all American law. Luckily, I recognised that and I didn't use it. But, you know, there is that reliance on incorrect information, which can be a concern, isn't
there? There is, absolutely. So I think for organisations, it opens up a huge amount of opportunity in terms of being a creative tool.
Yeah.
But it still needs very careful checking.
Yeah.
And it, coming back to that skill around prompt engineering, it has to be guided to give you the kind of information that you need. It's much more conversational than going to ask, for example, Google a specific question.
We've had students who've asked them to do an assignment, and you can tell they've used AI and they're quoting American legislation.
Really?
So they've not checked it, they've just used it.
Right.
But they may just presume it was accurate. You know, it's a.
Yeah.
You know, you never know what their thought process is, but you've got to look at it.
Yeah.
And edit it and make sure it is accurate.
Yeah. Yeah. You at least check if you're going to check.
Absolutely.
Brill. Okay.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Maria. That's fantastic. The research you're doing is really valuable. And what you've talked about in that conversation piece especially was fascinating.
Yeah.
Because I certainly don't know that much about AI.
I'll be perfectly honest. I think I'm one of them people that don't know a lot at all. I mean, you hear about it. There was Bletchley Park, wasn't there, at the beginning of November. You hear the worries. But actual understanding how it can add benefit and the use in an SME, I think there's a long way to go. So it might be interesting to do a revisit of this in a year's time.
Absolutely,
Maria.
It would.
The progress made.
Yeah. And I think actually, you know, in practice, what a lot of organisations will see, very kind of steady, kind of slow creep of different things gradually coming in. Mm-hmm. You know, for organisations that use Microsoft tools, you know, if you use PowerPoint now, designers using AI to help you to make your slides look prettier.
Yeah.
Or Excel's now using AI to help you to analyse your data. Mm-hmm. All of those suggestive things are areas where organisations, and especially SMEs, are going to be getting the benefit of AI, even if they're not actively going out and seeking it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's in the background then, is it?
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
So there's in particular with the enterprise tools around Microsoft 365 suite or similarly the Google ones, lots and lots of small feature release. And because those are now cloud-based systems, you might go in, you might see a new little button, and they're gradually being introduced.
Using it and they don't even know?
Absolutely.
Thanks, Maria.
Thanks, Maria.
Thank you.